Welcome, dream seekers and curious minds, to another enchanting episode of the Dream Hub podcast. I'm your host, Melissa Johnson, and today I'm embarking on a journey into the depths of the subconscious mind. My guest is the incredibly insightful Melissa Grace, a Jungian life coach, dream interpreter, and co-creator of the Dreaming Oracle Deck. With over 25 years in the healing arts, Melissa blends her extensive knowledge of Jungian analysis with intuitive readings and energy work to guide people towards authentic, empowered lives. Today, we'll explore the mystic realms of dreams about the self, the conscious feminine, and the intriguing connection between divination and dreaming. So sit back, relax, and prepare to unlock the secrets of your dreams as we dive into the soulful world of Melissa Grace. Thanks for coming onto the Dream Hub podcast.
Thank you for having me, Melissa. That was wonderful. Yes, I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Thanks. I've been following you for a while. I love that we have the same name. So you stood out to me straight away. I was like, oh, the dream teacher, and she's called Melissa. So yeah, I've been following you for a while.
Oh, that's wonderful. I've been following you too and really admiring the work that you're doing. So I'm really, really happy to be here. And so pleased that you are welcoming me onto your podcast. It's just wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So could you share with us your journey? Like, what led you to become a Jungian life coach and dream interpreter?
Yeah, so it all started, I mean, my unconscious kind of brought me into the dream world before I knew I was ready to go into the dream world. It was about in 1994, I was in my mid-20s and I was visiting San Francisco. I was living in upstate New York and visiting family friends in San Francisco. And my dear friend David, who is no longer with us, but he brought me to an iconic Berkeley bookstore called Moe's Books. And among the thousands and thousands of books there, I found myself intrigued by this book that I think was in the bargain pile called The Way of the Dream. And it's a book that is, you know, it's based on a documentary that was, it's pretty well known now. Where Fraser Boa, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right, was interviewing Marie-Louise von Franz, all about dreams. And I took it home, but I didn't really crack it until several years later, maybe around 2002, 2003, when I'd already been in Jungian analysis a couple of years. So that book kind of, just the title of it, it just started to engage me, you know, into the world of dreams, and probably was part of why I eventually did go into Jungian analysis. So, yeah. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I was thinking, so did you do psychology before you found the book?
I was in therapy before that. Yeah, I started therapy in 1989. And I, by the time I found the book, I had been in therapy, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, but I wasn't working with dreams in therapy. It was a more conventional therapy. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of in the ethers that I wanted to work with dreams. And I think I must've flipped through the book. You know, I did open it and read through it, but then there was just something else that when I decided, you know, I moved, I left my therapist and I moved to New Mexico. And I decided when I moved to New Mexico that I would look for a Jungian therapist. Mm. So
And so then you found one inside of your own
Yeah. Yeah.
self.
And I did. I found one, and when I first walked in the door of my of I of had my first session with my Jungian therapist, who I've been with since 2001. She asked me to tell her a dream, and I told her a dream. That was the main image in the dream was a tree, and at that time I was going through a pretty it was a pretty chaotic time. I mean, the 20s and 30s. I mean, some people get through that in a grounded way, but I certainly didn't. And I was going through a big romantic upheaval, one of several during that decade, and was not feeling grounded at all. But in this dream, I had this image of a tree. So she asked me to connect with the tree and what I now understand to be active imagination. And I just felt this surge of energy go through me when I was connecting with the tree. And I felt a level of groundedness and connection that I had not felt before. It was amazing. And I just amazed that that kind of experience happened through an image. And that I was hooked. I was like, okay, what's the next session? I just kept on coming back and coming back. I mean, she never asked me like for a commitment. I just was every time I had a dream, I called her, and I just kept calling her and calling her. And now it's been like 20 some years of me just calling her. It's like, I had a dream. So, yeah.
That's so cool. Did your
And
dream life start to go wild once you had a few of these sessions? Like, did you?
I think I just became deeply interested in it. I can't tell you if my dream life went wild, but I can tell you that the information I got from my dreams, my awareness of my dream life grew, incredibly. And my sense of awe at what I was retrieving from my dreams, what the insights I was retrieving were amazing to me. So.
Yeah, so you really loved understanding and the interpretation side of dream work. I love that part too. Like the
Oh,
whoa,
yes.
that's what the symbol was. It's like that mind-blowing
Oh,
moment.
no. That's the whole, I mean, I mean, I'm not going to say it's a drug. It's not a drug, but it's just like that aha moment when it really resonates, when you figure out what an image means to you, and it really resonates is wow. And I mean, and I love as a Jungian life coach and a dream worker, dream interpretation coach too, that I love seeing that look on people's faces. And I'm sure you've had that experience of, wow, does it really mean that? And the fact that it comes from you. It comes from the person, that it's not like something that's handed to them, like a piece of information, like, you should do this, or you actually feel this way and you don't know it. It's from them, and so it's undeniable, and very powerful because of that.
Yeah, I was about to say that moment's really empowering because it's not like someone else telling you this is your life or this is what it means. It's you going,
Yeah,
whoa,
exactly.
yeah, I figured it out on
Yeah.
my yeah, and it came from within, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. So you've interpreted thousands of dreams over your career. Could you share one or two memorable dreams and the insights that they revealed?
Sure. Yeah. I have one that it's a little bit of a multi-scene dream, and it really blew my mind because it's what I would call like a review dream. A dream that kind of wraps up the dreamer's experiences over the course of healing from a very abusive childhood. And she had the dream at kind of a pivotal moment in her life where she was trying to decide whether or not to stay in a relationship. And it almost felt like the dream was saying, look at how far you've come. Don't go back to the old patterns. But the dream, it's kind of like a hero's journey, the dream. It starts off that she witnesses a murder. And then she takes off from that scene, and she ends up at a beach where she goes into an ocean, a muddied ocean, and there's a huge wave that pushes her back onto shore. And then she ends up in a forest in a clearing where there are many animals, including a tiger that she's scared of. And she's running from the tiger, but she's scared to look back at it. And she flies away from the chase back to the scene of the crime, where she sees a little girl, a faceless little girl with her knees up to her chest and a piece of evidence, a paper piece of evidence on the floor. And the murderers emerge from the room, and when she tries to pick up the piece of evidence, they threatened her. So she leaves the scene again, and then this time she ends up at a castle, and she's wearing a gown, and she's telling everyone there's going to be a battle. There's going to be a battle. Then the battle is won, and she decides to return back to that scene for the little girl, and she convinces the little girl that if she can believe enough, she can fly. So she and the little girl fly back to the castle, where it then becomes understood that the battle was fought for the village that's just beyond the castle. So this is a really amazing dream. It's an amazing dream, really,
It's so
because
rich.
basically it's so rich, but
Yeah.
basically it's saying, okay, like she went through a kind of soul murder as a result of the abuse she suffered. And she didn't want to face it. She didn't want to look to see the tiger, to see the trauma, you know. But the oh, she jumped into the ocean of the unconscious. She just kind of wanted to lose herself there. But they said, no, you have to go back to the conscious realm. And she ends up, a great battle was fought, for her soul's life, and she ends up at the castle, which is this great symbol of her soul. So she regains her soul, and her future, which the village symbolized for her, was protected. So it just I was amazed by that dream, because it's such an the archetypal motif of the hero's journey, where you fight a battle, you go off on an adventure, and you fight the battle, and then you come back to the place a different way. And in this instance, she comes back to take to integrate her lost inner girl. She claims the lost inner child, and that is what helps her to go return again to the castle. So it, I was th that's one of the most memorable dreams I've ever worked with, and it was really quite amazing. Yeah.
Wow. That's huge. Like I said,
I know.
it's so rich. There's so many different things in it as well. Like if you were to fully go into that dream and
That's
explain all of the interpretation and everything with her, it would be like a 2-hour session because there's
exactly right.
like
Yeah. That is exactly right. And I'm leaving out little parts of it and things,
Yeah,
because just to make it more succinct for the, to describe it. But
Yeah.
absolutely, that's one of the dream. What's a dream you could return to over and over again? That's like a dream for a lifetime,
What a
that you
gift.
can return to that over and get over and again, and get more and more out of it.
Yeah, and
So,
it might
yeah.
even end up being a recurring dream for
Yeah.
different stages of her life when she needs it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Like, remember, you're the hero. Remember, you faced the tiger. You faced the wounded inner child who was faceless, and you've done it before. Don't you can do it again. Or, don't be brought back into those painful places. Don't assume you have to go back, because the castle is yours. You are the castle. You are the princess in the gown, so you are the queen of your life. You are royalty.
That
Yeah.
is so
Yeah.
much. That dream is showing a lot about the importance of being true to yourself, being connected to your soul. And you talk about this along with the conscious feminine. Could you explain what these types of dreams typically entail and why they're significant?
Yes, there is. I mean, because the conscious feminine is so much about authenticity, about being who you really are in your body. And I think, the way I think about how I see the conscious feminine showing up in dreams is there's a need to disidentify with the archetypal feminine. Like, for instance, the Great Mother. I think something I see a lot in women is they become overtaken by the mother archetype. So they're mothering everyone and everything, but they don't mother themselves. There's not like an embodied connection to the self. So there's this need to leave the realm of what one would want to be ideally, the realm of the gods and the goddesses, and become like a very limited human. That's a conscious feminine. And I think so a dream, there were a few dreams that came to me as I was thinking about that. And one of them is very simple, and it's a dream I heard Marion Woodman speak, describe at a in a recording of a conference she lectured at in Switzerland. And the dream is an anorexic dream, and the dreamer is walking down a spiral staircase from the gods of the auditorium. So she's walking down the archetypal realm, down to the stage of this auditorium where Mahalia Jackson is singing. And I don't know if you know her, but she is a late great gospel singer, a very big woman in a big, gorgeous, soulful voice. So this is it for this dreamer, this woman, this large woman. The dream was like amplifying the need for embodied, to be an embodied, have an embodied, ex authentic experience of her own soul. So that dream, it kind of leads to another dream that one of my clients had, where she couldn't, she was carrying a baby that was sort of also a puppy that she couldn't feed. And she was at a place in her life where she, as she put it, had been kicked out of being a mother, kicked out of the mothering role by an adult child. Like she was, her adult child no longer wanted to be mothered. So she has this dream of this baby that she can't feed. And she tries to get it to suckle on a mango juice and then ends up handing it over to a friend named Mary, who is going to breastfeed it, but she can't watch. So in that dream, like she's the infant. She's that she doesn't know how to feed. And the mango is like the food of the gods in India. So she's like trying to engage the archetypal realm, like be in the archetypal realm to feed it. And she does hand it off to another archetype, Mother Mary. But she can't watch, like she's not allowed to be part of, she can't engage, she's not allowed to engage in the archetype. There's a point in the dream where her partner says to her, she's about to go out to get baby food. And when she realizes she can't feed the baby, and her partner says, no, it needs milk. It needs human milk. It needs her humanity. It needs the meeting of her human needs on the human realm from human breasts, not the archetypal breasts of the Great Mother. So, and the last dream in this is of a of also of a woman who is identified greatly with the mother archetype and was trying to find herself outside of that. And she dreamt of two enormous refrigerators in the basement of her childhood home where she's playing with her little girls when they were little. And the dream was like amplifying her need for her own nourishment. You know, that these are these huge refrigerators that hadn't opened in a long time. They were dusty. And that was her capacity to nourish herself, which she hadn't opened. But it also seemed like in that dream that the playfulness, being playful with herself, was part of how she could access them, how she could open the refrigerators. So, yeah, there's in each of those dreams, there's like a theme of leaving the archetypal realm for an embodied experience of mothering oneself, which I think is core to the conscious feminine.
I think it's such an important topic to highlight because I suppose putting it in like the simplest terms, I see it happening a lot. I mean, I'm the age where there's a lot of people having little kids and mums going from being in their 20s and knowing who they are and like loving their life or whatever, and then becoming a mum and feeling like they have to have that complete shift. And then all of their wardrobe changes into mum clothes. And I notice that like the hair goes in a bun and they'll only wear the backpacks of the nappy bags. And like everything changes about them. And I know that when I first had my daughter, I felt like, oh, am I allowed to still wear like a sexy bikini at the beach? Like, am I allowed to wear a mini skirt out, or is that too sexy now that I'm a mom? And I started changing the clothes that I would wear for clothes that didn't really suit me, because I'm very like flamboyant and out there usually in what I wear. And I was like almost shaming myself for that without even understanding it. And I think that like collectively there'd be so many dreams happening that you're speaking about, trying to get us to connect and to look after ourselves, but also realign with who we truly are, and to stop trying to force just being this one new thing of a mother. Like, we are a million different things. So.
Exactly. I mean, there's so much pressure on women to be the ideal mother. I mean, to be the ideal woman in many ways, you know, like have the ideal sexy body and be the ideal friend and the ideal nurturer, you know, and the ideal mother. But I think being the ideal mother is probably one of the most imprisoning things. And underneath that, there's just the authentic self still remains. So it, yes, and in a way, also our Western societies kind of there's not a lot of help for moms and families, you know. Then anyway, this is a topic I could go off on because I've been a parenting activist for many, many years. As part of my other life is being as a parenting journalist. Even though I'm not a parent, I have a lot of I've heard a lot of stories from parents, from women, about how the confining nature and the isolation of the mothering role. And I think part of that, one of the greatest parts of that, is the isolation from one's most authentic self. And there's also this ideal that all of your energy and all of your resources have to go out to something else. But then there's really a person within who needs those resources for herself. And these are dreams. The dreams I shared, the two of my clients are older women of adult children who are finally realizing, like, wow, what did I leave behind all that time ago? And so I think a part of the conscious feminine is reclaiming that I have needs too. I have needs, and I have desires and wishes and hopes and dreams for my life. And I'm going to claim those. I'm not going to put them all on outside, you know, project them onto my children or stuff them away in, you know, a psychic closet. I want to own them for myself and feed my their what is food for my soul.
Yeah, that's great. I think that you not being a parent could almost make you better at this, because it's like, you know, sometimes you need to just get an outsider's perspective. And so you have like a different view on how to do it. Whereas another mother trying to help another mother, we just have these weird hormones that tell us to do stupid things and neglect ourselves. Whereas you're like, hang on, ladies, let's be sensible about this. Like, come on. So I think that's a good thing.
Well, that has been, I mean, that I have had many of my friends over the years have been mothers, and they've basically told me exactly that. You know,
We need you. We need you. We're all crazy.
We value the perspective of somebody who's, you know, not necessarily in this, because it's a whirlwind. I mean, from my observation. So,
Definitely. Well, I had a dream that I'll share with you. So it is a dream. I wasn't asleep. I was doing breath work, but I would say it's a dream because I feel like it comes from the same place. I had a vision. And it's not very long, but basically it was just there was like a black abyss. And then I saw like myself dive like off a diving board down into the darkness, and then it landed in my own womb, and then I turned into a baby, and then I grew into a human again, and then I was me again, and then I dove back again, back into my womb, and it was just over and over and over, like a
Wow.
cyclical circle. And then I woke up, or came out of it, the vision, and I was like, I am my own mother.
Oh, wow. What a powerful, that is
Yeah.
amazing imagery. That is so powerful. Wow. Talk about the wisdom within. That's
Yes.
amazing.
And I was in that state of my life where you were talking about before, of like, I would feed my kids, but they're not myself. And, I'd be exhausted and needing something, but still be tending to like their every want and need and leave myself behind. And like, as of that day, I was like, oh, why don't I just make 3 plates of food instead of two for them and none for me? Like, do you know? I was like, oh, I have to mother myself as well. So, yeah, that created a big shift in my life. It was great.
That's amazing. That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah, thank you. So, how do you see the connection between divination and dreaming? And I want to hear as well, how does that perspective influence your work on the Dreaming Oracle deck? I've heard a bit about this. I want to hear more.
I think that divination and dreams are very similar in that they both tap into the unconscious. And divination can help us understand the un what's going on in our unconscious just as much as dreams can, especially when we're working with oracle cards. The images that come up on the oracle cards can help us reflect on what's really going on for us. And the way that dreams reflect the energy that's going on in our consciousness and in our lives, so do oracle cards and or other, and many other forms of divination, like the I Ching or the runes or anything. So to me, it's all coming from the same place. They're all sources of information and insight into ourselves. I don't really view divination so much as predictive. Though of course it can have that aspect to it, and but I the way I work with divination is more for personal insight, and of course that's the way I work with dreams too.
Yeah, it's like you're asking for a message and here it is.
Exactly. It's kind of like synchronicity, you know. I mean, you know, you're walking around and you know you're looking for a sign, or you're not looking for a sign, but you know there it is, you know, you're thinking maybe I should move to the West Coast, and all of a sudden you see like this place from the West Coast, and then you have a dream about the West Coast, you know, or you can pull cards, you know, that say that have, you know, the West picture. I don't know, somehow reflect that desire. It's the same thing. It's like there's an energy that's larger than us, but also is us, that can manifest through all these different vehicles for tapping into the unseen.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know how to describe it, but it is. It's like you don't have to wait to go to sleep to have a dream to get an answer for a question. You can just, if you
That's
have a
right.
question on your mind, carry it with you throughout the day and see what pops up for you, but also to help pull a card, right? Yeah, I'd say
And they
you
all.
couldn't remember your dream last night, so I'd feel bummed about that, and so I'd go and pull a card to get my fix.
No, that's totally right. I mean, and when I run dream circles, I start them all with card pulls, and everyone gets a card. And then it's very interesting how the card will comment on the dream, you know, that they'll have something to, they'll have. There'll be a connection between the two of them, like, oh, okay, you know, I pulled the grief card, and here is this crying being in my dream. You know, what is that about? You know, or I pulled the card around, you know, the tree of life, and there's something in this dream that's very life-giving that wants me to experience more life energy. So there's a connection there. And yes, you know, also in the dream circles, if someone doesn't bring a dream, I'll just do a reading for them. And that also will kind of spark their imagination, will spark their intuition about the deeper layers of their reality and their consciousness that are wanting to be known.
Yeah, definitely. Even I find that the questions that I'm thinking prior to pulling the card, it will be answered by it. Like I went to a dream circle and it was about collective dreaming. So we're all sleeping in the same area and wanting to see if our dreams would kind of interweave in certain ways. And I was just had this really like logical thought patterns. And I was really hoping that there would be some kind of like proof, like that two of us would meet up and see the same thing. And I was really, really thinking about that before going there. And then when we pulled the cards, the card I pulled said science. And I was like, that's so perfect because it's exactly
that's
what I was
so
trying
perfect.
To. I was
exactly.
like, I need results.
Yeah. That's a wonderful example. That's perfect. I absolutely love that.
So speaking of your dreaming oracle deck, can you tell us about the unique collaboration process that you did with the artist Cara Roxanne and how the deck came to be?
Yes. So of course it's this amazing journey creating our own deck. I mean, we're both avid oracle users. So the way the deck came to be, it's been a 4-year process making it, and we're just getting it back from the printer in the next couple of weeks. But it started during lockdown, and right before lockdown, I remember Cara posted some of her images on her Facebook page, and I just, you know, in an impulsive moment, I messaged her and I said, oh, those would make great decks. You know, that would make a great deck. And actually, the story begins even before that, when we first met at a dream circle in Northern California, in Stinson Beach, several years earlier. I mean, 7 or 8 years earlier. And she's from England, but she was in the States accompanying her partner who was working in California for a brief amount of time. And I was going through a health crisis, and I had driven 2 hours to get to this dream circle because I was really desperate to be with my people, you know, would be my people. And that's the only thing I could find. And then she revealed that she had a dream not too long before that was about my health crisis. Like it had specific details in it that were about my crisis. And when I realized, wow, we have a connection. Mm-hmm. So we stayed in touch via Facebook and other and Skype calls. And then came the day where she posted the images and I said, oh, that would make an amazing oracle deck. And she's like, let's do it. And then it was maybe a few months later that COVID appeared and lockdown happened.
And COVID was like, it's time to do it.
It's time, you know, this be a great time to start the deck. So how we did it is, you know, we met every week and, you know, she fitted in. She's a mom and she was fitting in these weekly calls with me. And she would bring a dream or I would bring a dream and we would work on the dream and she would paint a painting about it. Wow. And then she would show me the painting and we would each spend like a half an hour or 45 minutes writing on it. And so from that came the original writing. And then there was a lot of editing that happened after that. But it was really amazing because of how I didn't know what she was going to write about most of the time. And she didn't know what I was going to write about. So, you know, sometimes we wouldn't work a dream. She would just bring a painting she had made. And she would just present the painting and we would write on it. So I didn't even have an idea about what it was about, but intuitively we would somehow meet, have this middle ground. So it came, the writing from it came directly from our very deep inner selves and the work we were doing on ourselves in that time, in that moment. And the archetypal energies we're working with and our personal issues and images. So all of that went into the deck And I think because of that, it's a very powerful and soulful and unique oracle.
That's really amazing because it's going to energetically have those like vibrational feelings in each of the cards. So I feel like when the consumer is like shuffling them and choosing their cards, they'll kind of magnetize to whatever energy is going on with them at the time. Yeah, that's
Exactly.
beautiful. How cool is that? Very creative.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No. Thank you for your enthusiasm for it. It was been a really amazing experience doing it. Yeah.
That's
Yeah. And you get
great.
it. You get why it was so very cool.
In so many different ways, even just in the way that you guys met. I love it when people are like, "Oh, I had a dream about you," or you feel like you've met in some way before. It's,
Yes.
yeah.
Like
And I know
again, it
what.
was like the way of the dream book came to me before I actually knew I needed it, and Kara came to me before I actually like she had a dream of me. It was like the unconscious was opening the way even before I consciously knew what that connection would mean or that it was even there. So
And you followed the trail out to the dream circle 2 hours away. It's like the things that we need are always there. We just have to be open and willing to see it and be looking and like following the feelings rather than
Exactly.
not. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. When I saw that advertisement for the little flyer for the Dream Circle, I'm like, I'm going to that.
Yeah,
I
I
didn't
would
even
have been
think
the
about it.
same. I
I
would have been the
mean,
same.
when I got there, I was like, wow, it took me 2 hours to get here. But I didn't plan it. I was just like, I'm going to that. I didn't
Yeah,
even
you're like,
think about how
whatever.
long it would take me to get there.
That's so good. You offer a variety of services, including Jungian life coaching and dream groups as well. How do these different practices complement each other in your work?
So I think that the dream circles are they're both have a unique way of dealing of working with dreams. The dream circles being a group experience means that when someone is working a dream in the circle, they get many different ideas about what the dream means. But it's also an amazing experience of that special energy, like that I'll call the self, that sense of transcendental connection with ourselves and other people that happens. So there's a special magic, like when Cara and I met. Or, just like, wow, I can't believe you just said that because this is what happened to me last week and you had no idea of knowing that. And there it is in the dream. And I wouldn't have seen that unless you had said that. And there's so many, many instances like that. So the, it weaves a kind of spell almost that's really quite amazing. And in the Jungian life coaching, there is a similar energy, but it's we go deeper, basically. We go deeper. And maybe somebody brings an issue, and I use a combination of like pulling cards or because I'm a psychic doing a channeled, offering channeled information and the dreams and the multiple layers of the dream, we can just go much deeper into the different layers of the dream and do more active work and how to integrate what is learned. Because in a dream circle you get the insight, but you're kind of then you're off on your own with it. But with the Jungian life coaching, then we work together over several sessions. How are we going to integrate that insight? What is that going to look like as you go out into the world? And also there's the wonderful experience of after you work one dream, what is the next dream? What is the next dream? Because as you know, being a dream worker, there's often a continuation, like a evolution or a progression of consciousness that happens. And we can experience that and not just track it, but experience that and there's a and be present for the soul evolving and unfolding in a very deep way.
I see what you mean. I know with the group circles, it's so cool how you do kind of bounce off each other, but people like I did a sort of a dream circle only yesterday morning with some of the IASD conference like committee members. And it was really cool because they interpreted one of my dreams. So I had like a panel of them all doing it.
Oh my gosh, that must have been extraordinary.
Living the dream, literally. Yeah, I was buzzing. But it was like you were saying, you get things off each other's dreams as well. So my dream story, there was other people in the group that were then resonating and going, oh wow, that's just brought something up for me in my life, and or someone else, wow, I got a really like inspired message about what I should do with one of my problems. Mm-hmm. And so even though it might be you go to the dream circle and you might not even have a dream to tell, you can still get so much from other people's as well.
And
having so many different people there, they're all coming up with different questions and noticing different symbols that were standing out to them, and giving their own experiences back as well to make me think of things in different perspectives. So yeah, it was incredible. So yeah, if anyone listening hasn't tried a dream circle, definitely try out one of Melissa's when she's got one coming up next. I'm going to start doing some more. I'm starting work at a new location this week and it's got a studio in it, so I'm going to be able to start doing them again. I've done a few online and three in-person workshops. And yeah, people do love it. There's just not many people come yet, so I'm trying to get it out to like the general population. Like dreaming people love it and will be like you said, drive 2 hours to get there. And the general population are kind of like, what are dreams? Why would we pay attention to them? And I'm like, so I'm just trying to put it all out on social media. Like,
yeah, I know. Guys. It's a hard thing to communicate. It's the kind of thing you have to experience.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know how to how to make it enticing.
Yeah.
You know, it is, but then once somebody experiences it, they get it.
Yeah.
And I've had the same experience you have of, you know, it's hard to get people to come to an in-person dream circle.
Yeah.
You know, and online it's slightly easier. But it is, you know, I kind of see it as if you build it, it will come, you know, like invoke the self, invoke the consciousness that is to be experienced, and you know, the right people will be drawn.
Yeah, definitely. There always is. So good. What are some common misconceptions about dream interpretation that you encounter, and how do you address it?
Yeah, I'm sure that you've encountered this as a dream worker, but I think a lot of people see dream interpretation as like almost very literal, you know, like, you know, or very kind of surface interpretations, you know, if they dream of someone they know dying, that person is actually going to die. Or if they dream of something about their boss that seems like their boss is a very evil person, they'll think their boss is really an evil person. Or, you know, if they dream about a certain symbol, they'll look it up and it's like abundance will be yours, you know, or something like that. So those are the kind of like dream interpretation encyclopedia ways of looking at things, where you see a symbol and you look it up. Whereas opposed to what happens in an interactive process with a dream interpreter, dream worker like you or me, when you're asking about the personal association someone has to an image, or you're looking at what an image means in the collective, over, you know, millennia, you know, diving into the collective unconscious. Not that, you know, sometimes a dream interpretation book can have a valuable little piece of information that helps as you're fleshing out what something is. But I find that there's that, or also a mistrust of dreams in general, or just like they mean nothing. So those are some of the common misperceptions. And I think the only way to dispel those is to actually work on a dream with someone and show them what is possible.
Yeah, that's a really good point. One that I've been noticing a bit lately is people thinking that dream therapy and dreams just highlight what your problems are. So like, why would I want to know? Like, why would I want to go back there type thing?
Exactly.
Like, yeah, it's like, yeah, sure, I know that I'm a people pleaser. Like, so why would I? Do you know what I
Yeah,
mean? And it's
exactly.
like, well, it's not just knowing what your complexes are, but the dreams give guidance on how to help you move away from that and move into a happier place. How
Yeah.
would you like be able to help someone pick out what the guidance in the dream is?
Well, I think I love that question, and I think because it highlights something I have noticed in dreams for some time, which is that the dream will present a problem, but it also presents a resource of some kind, usually. You know, whether it's a helpful person or a place that's very soothing. You know, for instance, if somebody is dreaming about an upsetting conflict, that there's usually something in the dream that's, you know, like a piece of fruit that can be eaten, or a lake where that seems peaceful, or a helpful person that brings a helpful object. And if there isn't a resource in the dream, you can use active imagination, which is, you know, for listeners who don't know what that is, just using your own imagination to climb back into the dream and dream the dream on. So if there's not a resource in the dream, what resource do you wish was there? And how does that feel if you imagine it? You know, how does it feel in if there's an upsetting scene in the dream, what's the opposite of that? What's the opposite of that pain or suffering? And what would be the image that symbolizes the opposite of that? And how can we bring that in? And does that help you feel differently about what's happening in the dream? So I think it's a wonderful question, because it opens the door to how the resource of our imagination itself. So even if, you know, the dream is not presenting something that seems particularly helpful or seems very upsetting, such as in the case of a nightmare, that there are options for working with that that help still help us find and activate the helpful figures and objects and experiences that are waiting for us in our unconscious.
That's a great answer. And it's opening up parts of our brains that we're probably struggling to find the answer at the time. But by asking yourself, like, say you've woken up from the dream and you've stopped it and you've missed out on what the guidance is. You know, some people are scared in the dream and they'll wake up, but it's asking yourself, like, in a positive way, what could have happened next? How could you have gotten out of this problem? And
Exactly.
that's sort of even going to be waking up their mind in waking life when they're coming up to a problem, going, oh, well, what could I do about this? Because if we're not used to asking ourselves those questions, we're not going to. We're just going to sit and wallow and be like, oh, this problem sucks. But if you're used to going, oh, well, what could happen next? What positive thing could happen? I think that's also opening you up to start drawing in more positive things energetically as well, like the law of attraction, rather than thinking, oh, everything bad always happens. When you're practicing this active imagination that you're talking about post-dream, you're sort of igniting those magnetic energies as well to bring in positive things and open up your mind to thinking something good could happen in the future. And I think when we're always in that expectant state of like something good could happen next, what could happen next that's good things are more likely to happen, right?
And you're using it's empowering. You know, it's empowering to open to that, and it's empowering to use your imagination instead of for worry for what is possible. What is possible?
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
that's
great.
confidence.
Thanks for sharing that. Speaking of sharing, do you want to share a personal dream experience, something that significantly impacted your life, or your approach to work, or anything that you wanted to share? Are you much of a dreamer, or do you more like analyzing them?
Oh no, I'm a huge dreamer. In general, I do not share my
Thought so.
dreams with the people I'm working with, because I feel like we're working with the unconscious, and I don't want my unconscious to contaminate their unconscious. But
Or if you can think of like a fun
I
one or a
can.
symbolic, like a quick snippet or
Yes,
anything. You don't have to
I think.
share if you don't want to.
No. I think I'm trying to think of one where I have, there was a dream that I had where there was a rainbow that was connecting me to another person. And it was a beautiful, beautiful dream. And I thought that at the time, I thought that it was a literal connecting me to this other person. But really, it was a dream about connecting me to my own creativity and the way that my creativity connected me to my soul. And when I realized that, there was such an awesome, awesome feeling of the possible, to link back to what we were saying. The possible, what was possible with my own creativity, like the rainbow of possibilities of consciousness and in my own life. And that the magic wasn't with the other person or outside of myself, but inside of myself. So that was a very beautiful and enlivening dream. That gave me a lot of creative energy.
Yeah, I bet, like a full spectrum, like a rainbow.
Yes, exactly. The full spectrum of consciousness, as opposed to like that limited sense that can overtake the conscious mind. When we're running around doing our day-to-day stuff that we have to do, and we forget about what's possible. These and but the other realm is still there.
That's so
The
cool.
unseen realm is still there, with saying there is so much more available to you. Yeah, and that was a dream that reminded me of that.
And I wonder if it's also trying to remind you that your creativity like flows through and lights up to other people because it was connecting to someone else.
Yes.
So it was like that gift when you're feeling it and sharing it, then it's flowing through to others.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful, that's a beautiful interpretation. Thank you for that.
Thanks.
Yeah, wonderful.
So just before we go, lastly, what message do you hope to leave with the listeners today regarding their own dream exploration and self-discovery journey?
Well, I hope very, very much that whoever is listening considers that their dreams have a wealth of information, insight, and ways of experiencing themselves that they have, they can't, that have not presented themselves, that they can't even imagine, that is,
Yes.
beyond their imagination, and that they can experience renewed hope and a renewed sense of self-esteem and self-worth and self-empowerment. They can experience direction for their lives, awareness of their life purpose, as well as just deeper knowledge of who they are on a spiritual level, as well as on a psychological level through dream work. If you're looking for a spiritual home, dreams can show you that it's inside of yourself in a very palpable, believable way. So I wish for everyone to be able to tap into the world of dreams. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an experience to be felt, isn't it? To go through. Yeah, like you said, you can't, we try our best to describe it, but it, like you said, it's really something that the person needs to experience themselves and then go, whoa.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly.
Thank
Yeah.
you. That
And
was
are you going to go
awesome.
to the ISD conference? I knew
I
that you were
am.
looking.
Yeah. Are you
That's
going to be
great.
there?
Yes,
Yay.
yes. Yes, so I'll be able to
Oh,
meet you in
good. Yeah, we'll
person.
catch up. Yeah, awesome. Oh,
Yeah.
that'll be great. Now that brings us to the end of another deeply insightful episode of the Dream Hub podcast. I want to give a huge thank you to you, Melissa, for joining us today and sharing your profound wisdom and experiences. And to my listeners, I hope that today's conversation inspired you to delve deeper into your own dreams and discover the messages and wisdom that they hold. If you're interested in learning more about Melissa's work or booking a session with her, I've got her links down in the show notes so you can just click directly to them. Now, don't forget to follow both of us on social channels and stay updated on upcoming episodes. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep exploring, and keep embracing the journey to self-discovery. Sweet dreams, everyone. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.